Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much. Hello. Thank you.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Sometimes the computer just needs a nice hello just to get it going. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Two things on the show today that I have to tell you about in advance, just in case you want to get involved and ask questions. Samantha Rawson is back. She's our dog expert. She's a dog behaviour expert and she gives very sound advice. There's no messing with Samantha Rawson when it comes to dogs. And if you have a dog of the canine variety, that's the only type there are, and you have a question for Samantha, get them into us, ray@rte.ie. And we're officially, although we've been mentioning it, we're officially launching our Run With Rays today in the company of Mary Jennings, and she's a running expert. So she takes people and she teaches them how to run. Yes, she does. She does. She knows everything there is to know about running. And she'll take you by the hand and get you up off your couch and get you out. And if it's something you've been meaning to do for years, now is your opportunity, because we are all over the country. Well, the northern half of the country. At the end of June, we're going to Buncrana, Sligo Town, Mullingar, Wicklow and Dublin. And Mary's in today to help us launch our Run With Ray. And she's here to answer any of your questions. So even if you're not joining us and you are one of those people who's been flirting with the thing about running, maybe, maybe not, to see the mates out doing it, I want to do it, I won't do it, I want to do it, I won't do it. Now is the perfect time of the year to start, because you have the lovely bright mornings, lovely evenings, a perfect opportunity to get out there and do a bit of running. Start walking, fast walking, then into the run. Anyway, Mary's here, ray@rte.ie. Now, we, just to let you know, news from home, we are complete air fryer converts. I have to admit, I was a bit like Joe Duffy and I was a bit sceptical about the whole air fryer phenomenon, because way back, this could be 7 or 8 years ago, I was in the local DID and your man, have you seen these things, these Actifries? He says, you can cook your chips there. All you need is a tablespoon full of oil and they do the chips beautifully. So I bought one of these Actifries. Now, it was about the size of a big printer, a big slab of yolk, with a clear perspex lid, and then like a sort of a, you know, a miniature generation game sort of conveyor belt type thing. And you loaded up the chips into it and you put the teaspoon of oil in and you left it there. And it made a sort of noise, you know, and you'd check the chips and they looked exactly the same as they did when you put them in. And then you'd go off and you start a career and you come back and you check the chips and slightly browned. And then, you know, you start on Saturday. Maybe by Tuesday, the chips were done to your liking. So that, just a bad experience with that. And I thought the air fryer was just a different iteration of it. So put it off. Jenny even got me one and I brought it back. That's how, you know, suspicious I was of the whole thing. Anyway, talking to people, loads of books, listening to people in the office, we eventually succumbed to the air fryer pressure and got one a few weeks ago. And as I say, we are now complete air fryer converts. For example, a lovely little dish we used to do at home. You get the salmon fillets, you take the skin off it, your man or the woman in the supermarket or fishmongers will do it for you. Then you slice them into sort of goujon shapes. You do the flour, the egg, the breadcrumbs, a bit of seasoning and that. And we used to fry them. And the problem was getting the pan at the right heat, knowing how much oil to put in. Then you burn them on one side, then overcook them, undercook them, all that sort of thing. Last night, did it in the air fryer. They looked like they came out of a restaurant. All perfect. Golden brown, perfectly cooked. Delicious. Delicious. And of course, here's the plus in the times we're living in. The air fryer is a lot more energy efficient than frying or the oven. It's also healthier because you use a fraction of the oil you would normally use doing chips or stuff like that in a deep fat fryer or a pan or whatever. So, yes, thumbs up for the air fryers. And when we're on all that sort of thing, this is mad now. You see, we tell ourselves stories about ourselves, and they may have been true at some stage in the past, but maybe they're not true anymore. What's he talking about? Well, you know Seamus O'Reilly. We've had him on a number of times. Brilliant book, a memoir about him growing up in the Huge family. Well, he spotted this figures on potato consumption in Europe. Now, if you were asked where would Ireland rank when it came to potato consumption, what would you say? We're in the top five, right? Definitely in the top five, not top three. I'd say maybe we're top of the heap. No, no, far from it. Far from it. An Irish person, that's you and me, eats on average 61 kilograms of potatoes every year. Right? 61. In Belarus, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, they eat on average 170 kilograms of potatoes every year. Ukraine, 126. Poland, 100. Romania, 100. We are right down there at 61. Like, Germany comes in above us. Netherlands, Belgium in above us. Now, there are obviously countries below us. I'm looking at the bottom end of the table. Cyprus, 15 kilograms. Bulgaria, 26. And Malta, 28. But I suppose if we were looking at the same research from 100 years ago, maybe we might have been top or thereabouts, but we have changed our consumption. And now people opt for noodles or pasta or rice, as well as or instead of potatoes. So there you go. A story we've been telling ourselves about ourselves for a long time is not true. We're not as big potato consumers as we might think we are. Which brings us nicely on to crisps and research from the University of Sussex on the behaviour of seagulls. Yes, I know, is it seagull season already? Because S for seagull, S for silly, isn't it? When you hear people on the radio talking about seagulls robbing your chips, you know it's the silly season. Anyway, University of Sussex have done research, and your average seagull is brighter than you might think because they observe what humans are doing and they copy them. So what they did was, now excuse the colours here because they do things differently over there with crisps. Like salt and vinegar comes usually in a green packet over there. Come on. Anyway, it does. And then cheese and onion, blue. We're blue and red and then mainly blue for the salt and vinegar. Anyway, there you go. That's the way to do it. So they take a green bag, and they take a blue bag and they put it on a weight on a beach, right? And then the researchers go back and they either eat out of a green bag or eat out of a blue bag. And they find when they eat out of a green bag, what do the seagulls do? They copy them and go foraging in the green bag. However, when they eat out of a blue bag, you guessed it, the seagulls copy them and go forage out of a blue bag. So I don't know what they're going to do with that sort of information. I suppose, like, don't feed the birds, don't let the birds see eaten. I don't know. But they copy us. They copy us. Obviously, they go, your man's enjoying that. He's even licking his fingers. I'm going to have a bit of that. So they go looking for the same picture, the same colour. 51551ray@rte.ie. Now, yesterday we were talking at the beginning of the show about the fact that here in RTE, they have archived acetate recordings from the 1930s right up to the 1970s. And we played you some samples of things that were in this new archive, which is available to you to listen to, and it's fascinating. And one of the things we played was the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makem live from Carnegie Hall from 1964. That was the date on the acetate disc. And I thought to myself, I'd never heard about that. And I went on a deep dive overnight and this morning, finding out more about this concert. So the concert was recorded on St. Patrick's Day in 1963 in Carnegie Hall. And there is a live album available called In Person in Carnegie Hall. And then I looked up Orosha Devaha Walya, which they recorded. And I was thinking yesterday that all of those people were in fine voice. And I was even, you know, musing and thinking and getting really romantic about it, that all of those people were in New York in Carnegie Hall, missing the homeland. And there the lads were up there in their Aran sweaters. And they were singing O Roshe Devaha Walya, and they were joining in because it's a song they learnt at school. That's not how it happened. That's not how it happened at all. Because in my research, I found this introduction by Tommy Makem into that song. And it's 3 minutes, but it's well worth the listen. So this is the lads, live, Carnegie Hall, St. Patrick's Day, 1963, introducing O Roshe Devaha Walya.
Listen, this whole thing here has been recorded tonight. As a matter of fact, there are microphones out in the audience. And You're on there forever, girl. What I think would be lovely is this. Even if we take a little time to try and organise it. Now, we have a pretty full house here of mostly Americans. It would be great if we had a record of everyone singing a Gaelic song. It's a very simple thing, and I'll teach it to you. We'll take a few minutes, and then we'll sing it. It's called O Roshe the Vahawalia. And it was written by one of our greatest, the Irish patriots, Padraig Pearse, who was the leader of the rebellion in 1916. And he had a vision, a dream, of all the soldiers who had gone away to fight in foreign wars on the continent for England, one day coming back to Ireland and fighting their own war at home. And the chorus says, "Welcome home, welcome home, welcome home with the coming of summer." In Gaelic, O Roshe the Vahawalia, O Roshe the Vahawalia, O Roshe the Vahawalia, Anish Erhoctan Tauri. Now, if you can't get the Gaelic words
easy,
it doesn't matter. Go. And the air goes like this. O Roshe the Vahawalia, O Roshe the Vahawalia, O Roshe the Vahawalia, Anish Er Hakan Tauri.
Simple.
O Roshe the Vahawalia, O Roshe the Vahawalia, O Roshe the Vahawalia, Anish Er Hakan Tauri.
Once more.
O Roshe the Vahawalia, O Roshe the Vahawalia, O Roshe the Vahawalia, Anish Er Hakan Tauri.
La 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 la.
So that's how it happened. That's how they got them all singing along. And I thought it was all expats. It was actually a lot of Americans who had learnt O Roshe the Vahawalia for the first time. They were huge in America before they were huge here. I don't know if you knew that. Ciarán MacMahona went over to New York in 1962 and he heard the Clancy Brothers playing and he goes, "What's this?" And he brought back three of their albums and played them here on RTE. And as a result, they became huge in Ireland. Billboard magazine reported that the group was outselling Elvis Presley in Ireland, adding that this was a most unusual situation for folk singers. Back in 1964, almost one third of all albums sold in Ireland were Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makeham records. And the late Gay Byrne said that the most famous four Irish men in the world were the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makeham. And how did they get their Aran sweaters and all that sort of thing? Well, seemingly, the Clancy brothers, who were originally from Carrick on Shore, they left there, they fought in the Second World War, then they left England and went to Canada, and then they made their way down into America and they became famous there before they became famous here. I've told you that already. But their mother, I think, was back in Ireland and the lads were touring and she sent them over Aran sweaters. And then in the early 60s, they were invited to play on the Ed Sullivan Show, which was the biggest chat show in America, viewership of 80 million people. Imagine that. And on the night, they were supposed to be down on the bill, but the main act, Pearl Bailey, cancelled and the Clancy brothers were promoted. This is how the story goes. And they appeared in their Aran sweaters in front of 80 million people. And that became their signature look, the Clancy brothers there. That album is available to listen to on Spotify, if you're on Spotify. It's called In Person in Carnegie Hall. And the brilliant thing about it, they have all the introductions to all the songs. So you get a real sense of the lads having the chat with the audience. And it's a lovely thing to listen to. Do you want to hear Oro? Yeah, it's only 2 minutes long. So we'll play it there. We've done the intro. So I might as well play the song. All the lads! Hey, Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makem in person in Carnegie Hall, 1963. 5 on 5 on RAE. Good afternoon. 5 on 5 on RAE. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Two quizzers, 3 questions, and there will be clues. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue, it's more difficult. So you get 2 points for a correct answer. And the winner gets the prize. It's a 2-night stay for 2 people at Farnham Estate in Cavan, located in the heart of a magnificent estate with 1,300 acres of mature woodlands and lakes to explore. Less than 90 minutes from Dublin, Farnham Estate Spa and Golf Resort is a contemporary and stylish hotel full of country charm and character, surrounded by natural beauty among acres of rolling countryside. So an 18-hole golf course and a superb health spa inside and out, beautiful country estate, is a playground for the senses. Farnhamestate.ie. Farnhamestate.ie. On this Wednesday afternoon, here is your qualifying question. In just a few weeks, we'll be heading out on the road with you for a very special event. Is it Run With Ray or Sing With Ray? So is it Run With Ray or Sing With Ray? 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. Good luck with that. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So 51551 for your text. Now, in front of me we have Adele and Laura O'Brien. Is that O'Brien Farrell?
Yes. Sorry. Yes, my father would be. So
sorry, double barrel. I was getting Adele O'Brien all the time and I just noticed the Farrell there. So sorry about that. thanks so much for coming in. You came up from where?
Mullingar.
Right, okay. And you have a fascinating story. It's not unique, but it's fairly unique in that not many people have gone through what you've gone through. So we'll throw it out and then we'll go through the details.
Perfect. Yes.
Right. So if you were in a circle, you know the way that people are in the circles and they're sitting down and you go, hello, my name is Adele O'Brien. Yeah. And my claim to fame is?
I got a kidney transplant 43 years ago and go I on. Got another one then. St. Valentine's Day last year from my daughter. My okay. first one I got from my mother and my second one I got from Laura, who's here beside me.
Your daughter?
My daughter. My lovely daughter.
That's mad, isn't it?
Yes. I'm a very privileged, very yes. lucky girl. Yes.
Yeah. And you're only in your 50s.
Oh, early 50s.
Early 50s.
Well,
sorry,
I can still
sorry,
say that.
Sorry,
yeah,
sorry.
I suppose, can't I?
Laura's good, throwing rice yeah. to heaven
I
there.
No, she's very young. Yeah. She's very young.
Yeah. Right, okay, so let's go back. You were 9.
I was 9 at the time when I was diagnosed with kidney failure.
Right.
And
a different time then. What year was it?
That was 1978.
Right.
I was eventually sent to Dublin. I started off in Jervis Street and sent out to St. Mary's in the Phoenix Park, where I spent the bones of a year in hospital. Coming and going, but I was mostly in the hospital. And eventually, December of that year, my mother was able to give me a transplant.
And here's the thing. This is another mad part of the story, because you went around the houses looking for a match.
Well, yes.
And it turns out your mother was a match, but there was a bit of a problem.
Well, both my parents at the time went forward, and my dad thought he was going to be the lucky or the chosen one.
Yes.
Because they came for him to do bloods and twice, but no, Mammy's was a better match, so Mammy's was done at the time.
Yeah.
So.
But go on. Yeah, and, give us the detail. She was pregnant.
She was pregnant with JP, my younger brother.
Look, I have the story in front of me.
He was a late arrival. He was two weeks overdue.
Yeah.
And so he was born in the end of August. So to give her time, they held on to me, and I was on dialysis and everything else until December. So we got the transplant was done on the 15th of December, 1978.
Your poor mother.
My poor mother, yes, yes.
Would that happen now? Well, I
don't know what happens in that situation.
Yes.
The chances are they wouldn't do it now.
Yeah.
They'd be waiting for an outside donor. But then I was very sick at the time. So they were just about keeping me alive.
Were they? Right.
Ah, yeah, they were, yeah.
Yeah. So. And were you aware of that as a 9-year-old?
I did, you know, it was being done in secret. And then I was so sick. But I remember the conversations. And I was just lucky that I was able to get the kidney and bounce back to life again.
So your brother was born.
Yes.
JP?
JP.
1978. Oh, probably yes. There was a lot of talk about there himself
was.
Coming.
He was the second Pope that,
And then your mother recuperated from that.
She did, yeah.
Just in time to give you one of her kidneys. And just because you've had these chats and you've been involved in the Irish Kidney Association and all that, it was a different time. Now everybody is aware about organ donation and the Irish Kidney Association and carrying your card and all that sort of thing. But back then it was big news, wasn't it?
It was. But then back then the facilities for dialysis was very poor. There was a branch in Castlebar and in Cork and in Dublin. Like where the branches now are everywhere, it was very difficult for people to get transport to get dialysis a few times a week.
Mm.
And it just wasn't possible for a lot of people that, you know.
And I suppose that's the nature of you know, modernisation of our health system, is that a lot of people would have died who wouldn't die now.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. And you were famous. You appeared on the cover of the newspaper.
At the time I did, yes. Right. Yes.
Because St Mary's in Phoenix Park.
Yeah. Right, President Hillary was the president at the time, and he always did the rounds on Christmas Day. He'd come over to the hospital and our photograph was on the front of the paper the next day.
Right. Both you and your mum recuperating.
Yeah.
Does your mum slag you over the years about having her kidney?
Not too bad. No, she wouldn't. No.
Not only like, did I give birth to you, I gave you a kidney as well.
She probably should, but
Because you hear about how long it's going to last. And were you told at that stage how long it might last, when you might need another one?
Well, at the time, it was to kind of get me back growing and get me into an adulthood, where now they tell you, you know, you might get 10 to 15 years.
Right.
Where my kidney was such a match that I was just extremely lucky.
Uh-huh.
And it did last the length of time. You know, in the last number of years, it was going downhill in a you know, it started I kept going, and I was lucky enough that I wasn't on dialysis much. I was on it and off it.
So when did it start to give up on you then, your mother's kidney?
Probably about 4 years ago.
Right.
Kind of, it was coming to very close to the end.
Right. And then you had to do the rounds again.
We did,
looking for matches. And I believe your husband, Mr. Farrell, John Farrell.
Yes.
I've read some of his work. That John... was stepping up to the plate.
John, well, my consultant first asked, how well do you get on with your husband? And I says, would he give you a kidney? I says, well, sure, I'll ask, you know. And of course, he stepped up, and he was actually, he went through all the rounds of testing and psychologists and social workers, and like that lasted 6 months. And unfortunately, his kidney wasn't successful.
Right.
And he was actually very disappointed that he couldn't go through with it.
Yeah.
And then after that, my brother JP, the famous JP, he went forward and his wasn't successful. So that was a year of testing.
It takes that long, does it?
It does, yeah. So, and then it was all in the middle of COVID. And then Laura was mad to go test it, and so she flew through it, really.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Hero.
Well, I don't know about that, but
so now when they ask who's your favourite?
We're not allowed to joke about that. No, those jokes do not go down well in our house. Everyone is loved equally in our house.
Well, I gave you my kidney. Come on.
Well, she can always throw it back at
me. So you were aware of what was going on, obviously. And were you itching to put your hand up or...?
Yeah, well, I think like from our side, because first of all, we've always known that this would come. It was never, I guess, in our house, a big surprise. We always knew that this day would likely come, and absolutely, it was a no-brainer for me to put my hand up and, you know, do it. As I always say, it was her kidney, she grew it, I've just given it back to her. I was delighted to
fair trade
forward.
I suppose.
Yeah.
but it is, and I've spoken to loads of people, but I'm still in awe of it, you know, that you would, because at every point along the way, I'd imagine, when you're going through the consultation and there's sort of counselling as well, you were given the opportunity to step back, aren't you?
Even on the morning beforehand, right. It was like, you sure now, you know, we can, they were always willing to work with me. They were always on my side in that regard, but like, there was never an inkling at all. It was a very easy decision for me to go ahead.
So they have to establish that you're not under pressure from your parents.
Yeah, I was grilled, like absolutely grilled. There was no, I was under no pressure to do it, that I was okay with doing it, and that there was no ulterior motive or anything that way. So I can confirm that there was nothing
there
in
was
my
no
favor.
Money passed. Nothing
at all. There's the will.
No, it was definitely nothing. I better say, categorically. Yeah, yeah. No, it was at any point, but no, the testing was easy as well and everything, but yeah, it was a very easy decision.
And I suppose because it's so common now, you could look around you and see how other people had donated their kidneys and they were living a full, healthy life. Indeed, your granny, case in point.
Yeah, exactly. Because we could see Myra and she's flying around still. So like it was again an easy decision. And beyond that, then the team in Beaumont really made sure, like, you know, I think you can survive on a quarter of a kidney at this stage. So you really like it was a very easy decision for me in that sense. So, yeah, it's great.
But what then if it, you know, and that's probably, I'm interested in this. What if you damage the kidney you have, then you have to be extra careful, don't you?
Yeah, within reason. So I thankfully wouldn't play professional rugby or anything that way. So so within reason, I have to be careful about what I do. But I can still live my own life very much every day. Like I can still ski, I can still run and do all of those things if I want to. So yeah, it doesn't really impact too much, which is great.
And you're in your 30s.
Yes.
So you had Laura quite young.
Yes, I was 20, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And yourself and John were childhood sweethearts?
We were. We went to Cleveland School. I went to Cleveland and I met John while I was in Cleveland. Yeah.
Right.
He went to Mullingar. He went to St. Finian's Mullingar.
Isn't that lovely that he was itching to give you a kidney? I love
that. There's a lot of couples now doing it and it works out very well. That has kind of kept in that circle.
Yeah. And I'd say it strengthens a relationship. Not that I'm saying that yourself and John need to be, you know, strengthened, but
the fact that he was willing to do it.
So the day in question, then, so it's you have to. It's a big operation for you, and obviously a big operation for you. Are you in separate parts of the hotel?
No, it wasn't a hotel. It was Beaumont. We were very well looked after in Beaumont. There's a special section ward. It's an isolation ward in Beaumont Hospital, only for transplants. And anyone that's after getting a transplant, they go straight back there. They go in the day before. And it's nobody can access the ward. So to keep it completely.
Yes. And I suppose with COVID, that was particularly important. So you went into quarantine before?
We were to have the operation the 6th of January and we were in isolation from Stephen's Day onwards.
Right.
And then unfortunately a lot of the staff in the ward got COVID. So they were working on skeleton staff, so we were pushed on into February.
Right.
So the 14th of February it happened.
Okay. Just give me the schedule for the day. Who gets operated on first?
Well, Laura was called first. Yeah. We went in on the Sunday afternoon. Laura drove up from Mullingar and we brought our suitcases in and went up to the ward and settled in. And Laura actually left. She had parked her car at the hospital. So she went home with her car. And
walked back.
She even washed the floor in her kitchen.
Jesus,
mom. Good bit of detail.
Well, she was so relaxed.
That's what you're saying.
She wasn't going to be back in the kitchen or in her house for a couple of weeks. So she came back to the hospital then. And then the next morning we were up early. She was up earlier than me because they brought her down first.
Yeah.
And then I went down around 1 o'clock. And so we were it was side by side. So once the kidney is out, then it's checked to see everything's normal. And then I was brought in and put under anaesthetic and then my operation.
Are you in the same theatre at the one time? No.
They're side by side.
Are they?
Yeah.
Right. You could hear me waking
up. I could. They were trying to wake Laura up when I was going in.
Right.
And
which was nice. I knew that I was all right the other side.
And then Laura, when eventually you see your mother knowing that she has your kidney in her body, is that emotional? Or?
Oh, it was. Very it was a big emotional. Day. Yeah. So like the Sunday for me going in, I was the healthiest person in Beaumont that night. You know, I like was so healthy going in. And then Monday went in for the operation and the operation went well. I came back up and I was full of meds. But the first thing I wanted to know was mom okay? And they were able to let me know that she was passing urine perfectly at that point. So everything had worked straight away. So they were delighted with how the whole thing had went. And that was the main thing for us. A few phone calls that day that I'd say if they were recorded, we were, you know, definitely still of the
morphine level.
But like, it was a great day. It was a very emotional day for us, for us all. And I think the morning went by for me so quickly because I was first down, so I was busy, whereas you had more time that morning to think about what was coming
up. It was lunchtime before I was brought down.
And of course now you're approaching it as an adult as opposed to a very, very sick 9-year-old.
Yeah.
But as Laura was saying, you had years and years, you knew this was coming.
Oh, well, I would have. In the back of my mind, I would have.
And the other thing about it, which is amazes me, is that the effect is immediate.
Oh, yeah. It just works. Yeah. It's like night and day. That's the only way to describe a transplant. That you're just, your skin, everything just changes. It's new blood in the system, as I call it. And it just works.
Switch.
Yeah. It is like a light bulb switch.
Right.
And it's just, the feeling is fantastic.
Yeah. So it's Organ Donation Week.
Yes.
And we're happy to remind people that ultimately they have to have the chat, because it doesn't matter what you have in your driver's license, what card you carry, it will be the decision of your family if there is a tragedy. And they will have to decide in the throes of sadness whether they can donate your organs or not. So you have to have that chat now with them. And it can be in a nice chat. Look, if ever anything happens, I would like my organs to be donated. And that's it, isn't it, really?
Yes.
Yeah. And you can save lives.
Save lives. Give somebody else the chance.
Yeah. Yeah. And what a great legacy then for the person who's gone to know that you've given life to somebody else. It's just so wonderful.
Well, even for them afterwards, at least they have a feeling, there's something good has happened.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, they mightn't have the person they want, but somebody else is getting a chance at life again.
Or a number of people.
A number of people between lungs and heart.
And even, again, because people, there's been a lot of talk over the years about this opting out. They do that in some countries where it's taken that everybody is donating and people can opt out. And that's coming down the tracks here. But again, you will have to have the conversation because...
It hasn't just passed into law.
Even at that, when it comes to the thing, the family will have to give permission. That's always going to be the case.
A very easy decision. Like for me, it was the easiest decision to make, and I would hope that other families would be able to see it that way. It's a tough decision to make when you're in that situation, but it can really make a difference.
And you're 100%.
Not a bother on me.
Right.
Not a bother on me. I bounced back pretty quickly. Bounced back, and then COVID was behind us, so we all had a pretty great summer after that.
And you mentioned running, so...
Running, slowly starting to get back properly into running, so that's... But I'm back now, so registered for the August, Antrim Half in August, properly kick up the whole
thing. And what is it similar to? Is there any surgery that it might be comparable to?
So somebody described it to me as similar to a C-section, really. Right. It's like, think about all the incisions and everything, it's similar. So couldn't drive for about 6 weeks, and that was it. Then, I was fine. I strolled back into Beaumont 6 weeks after, not a bother on me. So it was great. It was a really easy decision. So, yeah.
And what about Granny? What did she think of all of this?
She's delighted. She's just delighted. She was up with us in the Mansion House last week for the launch of Donor Week, and she was delighted to be part of it.
Yeah. Well, lovely to hear your story. 3 generations, 2 kidneys. 1 person.
That's
it. Something like that. There's a book in it. There's definitely a book in it. So are you Laura O'Brien Farrell or...
Jeez, I'm just Laura Farrell.
Sorry, John. Apologies.
I'm very much Laura Farrell.
We're in business in Mullingar, so we've Centra Circle K site in Mullingar. So that's why I'm well known as O'Brien.
Oh, you're right. Okay. And we might see you because we're coming to Mullingar to run. You're welcome to join us.
I'll feed you on the day.
Great. Okay, that's a deal. Laura and Adele, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lovely to meet you. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Now, we'll give this a blast.
Run with Ray, sponsored by the Irish Life Dublin Marathon. A better life with
there
Irish Life.
There you go. It's official. We're hitting the road June 26th. 5 5Ks. We call them Run with Rays. And Mary Jennings, running coach, is going to be helping us out and giving you advice along the way. And Mary joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Mary.
How are you, Ray?
Good to see you again.
You too.
So we did it back in 2019 and we thought we were going to do it every year. And then something happened in the world.
Exactly.
which stopped us all, stopped a lot of things. So we're back. We're back, which is great. June 26th. So we're starting in Buncrana. Mm-hmm. And we were talking to the people up there this morning and we had a lovely chat. It's a lovely route out on the coast. And then we're down to Sligo Town and across to Mullingar, home to Adele and Laura there. And then over to Avondale, Forest Park, and then up to Corca Park and Clondalkin. So that's our five this year.
Great stuff.
And they're all lovely 5Ks, and they're well worn courses because they're used by other people. So they're so good to see you again. So we're trying to encourage people, Mary.
Yes.
People who have maybe thought about it and never done it. Now you encounter people like that all the time, don't you?
That's it. They're the phone calls and the emails, I guess, thinking, yes, I'd love to do it, but I'm not sure it's for me, or am I too old at 40 or
right,
something.
Okay.
I get all sorts of messages and inquiries for things like that. And most of it is just self-doubt, and it's the reason people think they might not be able to do it is, I suppose, how they perceive themselves in terms of being an athlete or not. And if we can try and take even the word athlete out of this and see running as being a chance for fresh air, time for yourself, a chance to challenge yourself to do something, but within reasonable boundaries.
Yes,
one's going out to win this.
No.
Like there's not even chip. I mean, it's all about doing your own run at your own pace, walk when you want, run when you want, but almost use the events as a deadline,
yes,
I suppose.
A target.
5 weeks to kind of say, I'm going to get myself out the door three times a week.
Yes.
There's no prizes for winning. I don't think there is anyway. Maybe there is. But there's no prizing for you. Like it's your reward is to turn up to that event thinking, I've put the effort in. I've got out the door.
But that's it. But that's the brilliant thing about these things. It's about challenging yourself.
Exactly.
And I've seen it so many times because this is going to be our sixth series of Run With Rays. I've seen it so many times, people crossing the line and going, I can't believe I've run 5K.
Isn't it amazing? And also you see people hugging each other,
yes,
people who've got each other through it.
Yes.
I suppose everyone could think of someone now that they could text and say, will you do this with me? Will you get me out the door? Because, to get that celebration feeling at the end, there's the hard work of, will I get out this evening or will I go this morning? There's all the procrastination. But when you actually do it and stick with something and go at your own pace and not compare with other people, you've nothing to lose, really.
And I was saying at the top of the show, this is the perfect time of the year because a lot of people go at the beginning of the year, I'm going to start running 1st of January.
I know.
And
it's like, dark home from work.
Exactly,
and the whole
dark in the mornings. Now you have, it's daylight. I was up with the dog at 4:30 this morning. It was light.
Wow,
It's still light at 10 o'clock at night. So you have so many hours of daylight to
and
get
even
out
with
there.
That in the training, it's not like you need a huge amount of time. Within 45 minutes or to an hour maximum, you could be out the door, warmed up, done your session, cool down and come back home.
Okay.
So
let's from a stop start then.
Okay.
Running isn't for me. I'm not a runner. You've heard them all before and I've heard them as well. So to take somebody like that by the hand, lead them out the front door or the back door, whichever way they go.
Yeah.
So you walk first, obviously, do you?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to be realistic or reasonable about starting, wondering, is it for me, is it for not? Start from a basic health perspective. If you have any concerns and think from a doctor's perspective or for any reason you think you shouldn't be doing it, talk to someone and get the okay from that front. But if the only thing that's holding you back is Netflix or I'll put it off till September or whatever it is, then this is the nudge really for you to get out the door. Mm. And to start like that, start with a walk. Okay. I was thinking 5 weeks from now, even if the goal for the first week was to get out the door three times. And within that, there wouldn't be any major certain number of running minutes you have to do or anything. Just to put on the gear, get out the door, and any minute you run within that 30 minutes is a bonus.
Okay.
So then you've established a routine of getting out the door.
Yes.
Without any ego of having to run a certain number of minutes or coming home breathless, I've got out the door, that's my success.
Put on the gear, get out the door.
That's it. That's if you do that three times between now and next week, then you've started, haven't you?
Now you go, just go beyond the front gate or whatever you have.
Well, you see, once you're out,
that's
the work done,
I read somewhere in one of those running books that putting on the gear is a big part of it. Because once you have it on, you go, I might as well have the gear on.
So
let's talk a little bit about the gear then.
Yeah.
Because people, I think, sometimes are intimidated by that. Yeah. I don't know what to wear, what shoes will I wear, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. Do I need to get the 200 euro ones or what? How much money should I spend?
Yeah, well, I think if you think of a lot of people, you talked about COVID putting paid to a lot of people's plans. A lot of people probably have a pair of runners that might be dusty that could do it being taken out. So not everyone has to go off and buy new gear. Most people probably don't. Most people have something that they, you know, they use for other sports or even just for going for a walk.
Yeah.
I would think from a practical point of view, say from the head down, sun cream, actually, believe it or not,
okay.
or a hat maybe, or sunglasses,
yeah.
Can be a practical thing this time of year. You can look out thinking, oh, is it warm, is it cold? I really think there's not. You don't need more than t-shirt weather in this
yes,
weather.
Yeah, yeah.
Sports bra under it for some of us. And then beneath that, I mean, whatever length, leggings or trousers, whatever you're comfortable in, comfort has got to be the key.
Yes, yeah.
One thing I see a lot of people doing is holding stuff when they're running. And, you know, you're just, even if you do it now, if you imagine yourself holding keys, you're grasping your hand, you're gripping, and that's tension. So
yes.
we'll talk again about running easier and lighter, but holding tension it's no benefit.
I don't know how people do it. I can't hold anything.
No, you can. If people holding a phone and holding
yeah.
keys and texting and all sorts. Anyway,
yes.
the whole thing about this is freedom and getting out there.
Yeah.
You know, so if you can get a lot of the trousers and leggings all have little pockets in them now for holding, or at least also think realistically, what do you need to carry?
Yeah.
Or you can get these little tiny little bum bag things that can carry for you. But
okay.
there's no reason to really have to hold anything in your hand. And then moving down then to, in terms of socks, you can buy very fancy socks or very basic. I would be sticking with the basic for now. And if you know you've shoes that are probably all right, stick with those for now.
Mm-hmm.
If you do feel you're at a stage where you wanted to buy new running shoes, I'd always go to a dedicated running shop, you know.
Now, just on the shoes, because
yeah.
like, I look at people's feet all the time.
Yes.
I think most people now have a shoe that they could run in.
Yeah.
Haven't they? Because it's gone from, you know, 10, 15 years ago where mm-hmm. ASICs were only worn by
yeah.
by runners to most people wearing. I see a lot of people wearing Brooks out
yes.
walking. They're
mm-hmm.
a running shoe as well, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, there's endless ways of looking at running shoes, and you'll hear people talk of minimalist shoes, or you'll see other ones that are really, really cushioned. The problem is that all our feet are different. All our bodies are different. All our gaits are different. So people often say to me, oh, what shoes are you wearing? But that's not to
no,
say that
yes,
they're right
yes,
for them,
yes,
you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it's literally going into the shop, trying them on. You want comfort. I always feel you need room for your toes to breathe, you know. That's another thing. And just to even go into a shop, try on a few pairs and see what feels good. But those running shops, they will help you. They'll make you run up and down. Well, don't panic. It's not scary. About 10 steps up and down, just the room, just to see how your foot falls. But if you feel you've no problems generally and you've been walking comfortably for the last few years, you're
they're
starting slowly.
Start slowly.
Yeah,
yes, yeah,
start with that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'd also say to get off the paths and stuff right now. Every park or everywhere you go at the moment, you'll see the trail being worn where runners and walkers are on the grass. So follow that, and that's also lighter on your feet as well, lighter on your body.
Okay. And it's very achievable to get up to 5K in the time we have.
It's very achievable, if I'm being perfectly honest, to certainly walk the whole 5K.
Yes.
And then whatever elements of running within that will depend on where you are.
Okay.
How dedicated you are to the process, how much you want to push it on, but also people will have things that happen over the next 5 weeks that might set them back. So if you set your goal to complete the 5K, if you're on a comeback, of course, you know you've probably done it before, so you're more likely to get
okay.
there. If you're a beginner, just start gradually and see how it goes.
Okay, if you're thinking of joining us, or indeed if you're just thinking of getting into a bit of running and you're not in the areas that we're travelling to, if you have any questions for Mary, she's free of charge now, because we're doing a little podcast after the show today, and Mary will answer all your questions. So get them into us now. ray@rte.ie, and we'll be speaking to Mary in the coming weeks, and we'll be doing a little podcast as well. But for the moment, Mary Jennings, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Run with Ray, sponsored by the Irish Life Dublin Marathon. A better life with Irish Life.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurmaga Seamus, thank you very much. Time to do our Who Done a Quiz. Two quizzes are standing by, and three Who Done It questions and a prize. And this week we've a two-night stay for two people at Farnham Estate in County Cavan. It's located in the heart of a magnificent estate of 1,300 acres of mature woodlands and lakes, 90 minutes from Dublin. There's the golf, there's the spa, and lots more besides. Farnhamestate.ie. Farnhamestate.ie. Hello, Peter.
Ray Darcy, how are we doing?
Not too bad. Is it Peter Heary?
That's it, yeah. Heary. Perfect.
Heary. Right, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an unusual one.
It is. Heary, smelly,
yeah,
sea,
yeah.
touchy.
Yeah. So generally, any heary that you find will be related to me somehow,
right.
good or bad.
Yeah, yeah. And where are all the Hearys? Are they all in Carlow?
For the most part, we're in Carlow, Mead, Kilkenny, and some in Dublin as well.
Right. And whereabouts in Carlow are you, Peter?
I'm just a stone's throw from Carlow town in Grey Cullen.
Oh, yeah.
On the Leash side.
Yes, yeah. And you're in your workshop. Is this a hobby or is it a business?
Well, it's a hobby, hoping to be a business.
What is it?
Doing a bit of woodworking in the classic car area.
Right, okay.
What? A very, very specialised type of work, so it is.
What's the definition of a classic now for insurance purposes?
For tax, it's pre-79. Insurance is still a bit woolly. Depends on the make and model of car.
Right.
But tax, pre-79.
Pre-79, okay. Yeah. What are you working on at the moment?
I'm just getting together some templates. I'm hoping to make a dashboard, you know, the trim.
The dashboard.
That you find in classic cars, you know, the fancy burl woods and the polished woods and the like.
Yeah, yeah. And what did you do before this?
I would work in tourism, actually.
Right. So is this a hobby becoming a career? Is that the way it's going?
That's what I'm hoping to make of it, yeah. I've been woodworking for years, you know, as kind of an amateur, and just skills I developed over the years, and I took an interest in classic cars, so combination of the two, really.
So would that be, that's a high-end wood they'd use on the dashboard, wouldn't it be?
Exactly, yeah. You know, all the fancy burl walnuts and you get your polished door cappings and radio trims and the like. Yeah, so it would be very high-end.
Nice.
High-end, specialised work.
Yeah. Wow. That's exciting, isn't it?
It's certainly different anyway, yeah. It's unique.
You're niche.
That's it, yeah.
Have you got a name for your new business?
To be confirmed.
To be, all right.
But that's not the name.
Doesn't have a nice ring to it, but to be confirmed. Yeah. Have you got a classic car yourself?
I do, yeah. I have a little Triumph Spitfire, a little two-seater convertible.
Yeah. They're tiny, aren't they?
That's it, exactly, yeah. They're a very small little car, but very simple. Very basic little car, but it's been neglected of late, so I really need to get around to it and get it tidied up and get it out now that we have the weather.
Yeah. I was talking to a guy recently who was telling me that, because I would have had all the Golfs over the years, I'm a Golf man.
Oh, very good.
And he was saying that the Golf I had first back in the 80s is the same size as a Polo now. In other words, cars are getting bigger, although it's the same model, but they're actually getting bigger.
There's obviously safety concerns taken into account now and crumple zones and the likes. Yes, everything's gone bigger.
Right. Okay. When you have a name for it, let us know and we'll give you a shout.
Brilliant.
Out.
Well, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, you're up against Katrina McShane in Drogheda in County Louth. How are you doing, Katrina?
Hi, Ray. How are things?
Not too bad.
Put me to shame. I'm feeling guilty.
Why?
I'm only cleaning the house.
All right. Okay. And he's creating bespoke dashboards for classic cars.
Exactly.
Yeah, I suppose we should.
Exactly. Best of luck with the new house, Peter.
When you put it like that, Katrina, you're probably right. He's probably putting us all to shame.
I'll hang up now.
Yeah, no.
I'll say poor student.
You went back to education.
I did. I went back to education last year. I closed my business a year and a half ago and went back to Diffie in Drogheda, the Drogheda Institute for Further Education. So I have a year under my belt. Won't be listening to you next Wednesday. We'll be graduating.
Oh,
so
brilliant.
I need a pass.
I need some information now. So what did you used to do?
I used to have a bakery, a small home bakery in Ashburn.
Right. And why did you give it up? Was COVID anything to do with it?
No, in an indirect way, I was very privileged that I was able to work the whole way through. Mm. And I was burnt out and tired. And I decided to close up and to retrain. So hopefully, if anybody knows of anybody looking for you or anything like that.
What are you retraining as?
I did the year course, Office Administration with Medical Terminology.
Right.
In Diffie, so I had no computer or anything like that, and now I can use computer, send emails.
Brilliant.
I've always had customer service and that, but I'm thinking of going back to do the criminology and psychology course next year.
Wow.
So we'll see. Yeah.
And I suppose the final piece of the jigsaw for people at home, because they're, you know, you have an interesting story, is the numbers. As in your age?
My age?
Yeah.
Oh, never ask a lady your age, but then it's okay to ask me. No, I am 52 and proud.
Right. Okay. Well,
I've had a tough year, but I couldn't recommend going back to education enough.
Yeah.
The lecturers and the teachers in Diffie are just amazing.
Well, fair juice to you, Katrina, because that's a big step. That's a big thing to do.
Yeah, it wasn't something that I took lightly. As I say, I had a very successful business, but yeah. Probably too much sharing now, but a year ago to the day, a year ago last week, I was actually diagnosed with breast cancer. So, and I had no idea, there was no, nothing, like, that wasn't the reason that I closed up the business, but it was nearly something telling me, you know, you've done enough, you know, get out now. And I listened to my body, and a simple conversation with a GP when I was getting my blood pressure medication renewed, and I just mentioned something in passing, and the following week I was in the matter, and a year on, reconstruction, chemo, radiotherapy, everything done.
You've had a tough week, and you did the course as well on top of that.
I did, yeah. Well, that was my saving grace, I won't lie to you. A reason to get up every day, especially when you didn't feel like it.
Distraction.
You know, you had a reason, a distraction, exactly, and the college and my classmates.
And how are you now? How are you now?
Wonderful. I was at the gym at 7 o'clock this morning and killed and cleaning my kitchen.
Right.
I'm brilliant, right?
Brilliant. And graduating.
A few little issues, but overall I'm brilliant.
Great. And graduating next Wednesday, which is great.
Graduating next Wednesday.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Hopefully I get a certificate.
Wow.
All good.
I'm delighted I'm talking to you two today. Great, great stories. Mm. Brilliant stories. Okay. Yes. So, and now we have the boring bit, the quiz. So Three questions each. I'll give you the category and then I'll ask if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue, it's more difficult. So you get 2 points. Whoever has the most at the end is the winner. If it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck, Peter, and good luck, Katrina. Here we go.
Brilliant. Good luck, Katrina. Good luck, Peter.
Okay.
Thank you.
Peter, breakup songs. That's the first category, breakup songs. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
For 2 points, who is this?
Since you've been gone, I can't breathe for the first time. I'm so moving on, thanks to you, now I get what I want. Since you've been gone.
Who's that?
Jeepers, is it Kelly Clarkson?
It is Kelly Clarkson. Yeah,
oh, brilliant.
Yeah, there you go. She won the first season of American Idol back in 2002, 21 years ago. You get 2 points.
Wow.
Now, Katrina, breakup songs for you two. Do you want a clue or not?
No, thanks.
No clue. Who is this for 2 points?
You can go your own way.
Mac.
Say again.
Mac.
I heard the Mac. What's the beginning of it? I think we've lost Katrina. We were just getting the Mac. We'll try and get Katrina back up.
Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah,
can
Fleetwood Mac. There you go, you're there.
Fleetwood Mac.
Yes, yeah, you're there.
There's
probably
a train coming, that's why you couldn't hear me.
Right, you'll have to explain that some other time. Okay, but you get the 2 points there. Yeah,
yeah.
No, I could hear them. I knew that you were breaking up on the train and all that sort of thing. Okay, good start for both of you. Two all. Category number two, Irish broadcasters. Peter, Irish broadcasters, do you want a clue or not?
We'll go on no clue.
No clue, okay. Can you identify this Irish broadcaster for 2 points?
Don't make unnecessary journeys. Don't take risks on treacherous roads. And don't swim in the sea. Incredibly, people have been spotted in the water here in Blackrock and Salt Hill both today and yesterday.
Who's that?
Oh, Steve, isn't that terrible? I can see her. I've seen the clip so many times.
Yes.
No.
Theresa Mannion. Reporting from Salt Hill during Storm Desmond, and that's 8 years ago, 2015.
Okay.
Now, you're not out of a jet, Peter. Katrina, a chance for you to go in front. It's Irish broadcasters. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
Okay. So, for 2 points, which Irish broadcaster is this?
Yeah, the 10 siblings moment was... Do you know what, Greg? When I started it, I knew my guests, read all my notes, was very on top of it. And then I thought when I played some of my best rugby, I was, you know, off the cuff. So I did that and looked at the screen. I hadn't read my script and haven't done it since.
Who's that?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Ron O'Gara, no?
No, no.
I don't know.
Tommy Bow. Okay, even enough there. Neither of you got any points out of that. So it's 2-2 still, and we're down to the final question. This will decide it, obviously. It's hits from the movies. Peter, hits from the movies.
Okay.
What do you want to do?
We'll go naughty.
Okay. So we need the name of the song. Is that it? Just the name of the song? Just the name of the song. I tell you what I'll do. Just the name of the song or the artist. I don't need both of them. The name of the song or the artist for 2 points. So here we go. Sammy, I need
is
the singer.
Pharrell Williams?
Yes, there you go. Yes. Good. Lucky you got that, because or else I would have been in trouble. There, Pharrell Williams, you get 2 points for that. Okay. Yeah, they're telling me I need the name of the singer. Katrina, I got that wrong just on this one.
Okay.
So, Peter's on four. Peter's on four. You're on two. If you get this right with no clue, we're into a tiebreak situation. I presume you're going to go with no clue.
Yeah, no clue.
Okay.
No clue.
Name of the singer then for 2 points. Here we go. Eminem is right, yeah, you're in there straight away, 2 points, you don't need to hear the rest of that. Good luck, Eminem, thank you very much. So it's four all, well done to you both. Unfortunately, the only way we can decide it now is on our tiebreak question. We asked you this question before we went on air. Whoever answers closest to the correct answer is the winner. I'm going to repeat the question now for our listeners. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to walk from Avondale House in County Wicklow to Westport House in County Mayo? Peter, your guess.
I said 2 days, 12 hours, I think. About 60 hours.
60 hours, that's what you said. It's 274 kilometres. So walking from Avondale House to Westport House. And your guess, Katrina?
Oh, God, I feel so silly now. 18 hours and 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you know, it's impossible because we never do these things, you know. So you're just plucking something out of the air. It's... 56 hours. 56 hours is the correct answer. So Peter, you're today's winner. Katrina, listen.
Speed walk, Ray.
Yes, we're going to. And they're going to kill me for this, but because you've had a tough year and you're graduating next Wednesday, we're going to send you out not one, but two Ray D'Arcy Show Keep Cups. And lovely talking to you, Katrina.
Ray.
Mind yourself.
Thanks, you too.
See you now. Bye. Peter. Well done, Peter.
Nice one.
You're off
Excellent.
To Farnham Thanks Estate, and you can go to farnhamestate.ie to see what's in store for you. Great talking to you, Peter. Well done.
Fantastic.
Good luck
you
to
too,
you. Bye,
better.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Our dog expert, Samantha Rawson, joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Samantha.
Hi, Ray.
Now, Samantha, before we get on to our listeners' questions, there's a story in the papers today about an attempted dog napping where someone tried to distract a dog owner at traffic lights while another unhooked the lead of the dog. Thankfully, somebody spotted what was happening and they assisted the dog owner in retrieving the dog who had bolted. The dog's safe, but it's a little unnerving to say the least. There was a spate of that, wasn't there, during COVID because there was a big demand for dogs. I thought that would have stopped now.
Well, they were being stolen from, during COVID, they were being stolen from people's houses and from people's gardens. That's the first case I've heard of a dog being stolen while out on a walk. And that I read the story and that the owner was distracted by somebody else, a bit like a pickpocketing scenario.
Yeah.
So the only thing I would say there is, obviously, to be vigilant, don't ever tell anybody what your breed of dog is. Just say it's a mongrel. You know, right. Never boast about what fantastic breeding your dog has.
Okay.
And maybe put two collars and two leads on it. And I would be interested to know, was that dog wearing a harness? And was the lead attached to the harness? Because the harness is kind of attached lower down the back. So the owner mightn't necessarily have been aware. Whereas if the dog is attached to the owner via a collar, you're much more likely to be aware.
Uh-huh.
So I would have a collar and lead and a harness and lead and maybe even two collars and two leads if you think it's that bad. You can get leads with extra secure clips on them. They're a bugger to open. I don't like them for that very reason, but in this scenario, they might be quite useful. So maybe explore a few leads and see what kind of security clips there are.
It sounds like this is out of the ordinary, though.
Yeah, it's very unusual. It's the first case I've ever heard.
Yeah, we don't want to scare people. I think it's out of the ordinary.
It is. It's very unusual.
And if it becomes a thing, we will hear about it, won't we? Okay, firstly, I'm going to abuse my situation. We have a dog at home. He's a golden retriever. He's about 7 or 8 and he's waking up at night. We tried the whole thing with the music and all that sort of thing. It's now it's the magpies, because it's daylight around 4:30. Mm. The magpies are whatever that horrible noise they make. Clack, 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 clack.
Yeah.
And he's going mad.
The beauty of nature, I know.
Yeah, lovely, 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 lovely. So anyway, something's got to give. Do you know that something's got to give? Yeah. So usually Jenny gets up. I get up the odd time. I was up twice last night. So it's becoming something that we have to sort out.
Okay.
Any ideas?
I would try and put him in a darkened room, so to speak.
He is in a darkened room.
So to, you know, suppress everything, every stimuli. Okay. Other than that, I would try and knacker him out and put him out as much during the day. So by the time he comes in at 10 o'clock in the evening, he is exhausted and he wants to go to sleep.
Okay.
It sounds to me like his pattern is, I wake up at 5 o'clock and you must wake up.
With the magpies.
With the magpies. The other thing is you can do, it's a bit like a crying child. You might have to just sit it out and see how long he persists for, because dogs have much more patience than we have and they will outwit us. So sometimes you've just got to sit through it, put your headphones on, put some music on and say, I don't hear you. You know, off you go. Or I'll send him to somebody else and they can sort him out. But it sounds like a waiting game. It sounds you've got to sit it out.
Okay, thanks for that. Okay, and now, common one, this one. Samantha, my puppy has just turned one. A Malteson, a great little dog.
Malteson. Yeah.
A great little dog in every way, but hates travelling by car. I've tried sitting in the car, going on very short drives, etc. But she still gets anxious, drools, yawns and many times vomits.
Okay.
I feel so sorry for Molly, the dog, obviously, and would love her to enjoy a trip in the car, to enjoy a nice walk, etc. The vet has given me tablets for long journeys, which help, but I hate to see her so stressed when she sees me opening the car door. Have you any suggestions, Susan?
I would make the car fun, Susan. I would play a little game with two doors open and get the dog to run through the car for a toy or for a treat. And then maybe, you know, slowly close one car door while the other one is open. Your dog obviously feels trapped and does not feel safe. So you've got to give it the experience that you're not trapped, that there is an exit, and this only lasts for a short time. So I would make it fun, and then I would build up the time she's in the car with the door open gradually. You know, over a period of time.
Okay, but good advice. Hopefully that works out for Susan and Molly. Hi Samantha, this is Vicky. I have a 14-week-old cockapoo female. She's extremely nippy with the 6-year-old, but not me or the 14-month-old baby. How do I explain to the child that the dog needs her to be calm? I know it's not the dog's fault. She gets excited. Also, she cries for me all the time and won't be outside unless the door is open. She howls. Any tips? Welcome.
Baby gates are great for this, because it means that the dog can be on one side of the baby gate. The 6-year-old is on the other side. They can interact safely. So you know, the child can sit there on the floor and interact with the dog, and the dog doesn't have the opportunity to jump all over the child. If there is no baby gate, I would always leave a lead on a dog with a child, and children and dogs must be supervised at all times. The 6-year-old is only 6. You can't expect her to know how to behave around a dog. Hmm. So, you know.
And the dog is only 14 weeks.
Yeah.
You can't expect the dog to know how to behave around a 6-year-old.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So baby gates or puppy pens in this scenario are brilliant. But it's about keeping everybody safe and not allowing them to learn bad habits.
Okay. Nolene is on next. Hello, Samantha. I have a 7-month-old Westie. He was a rescue at 18 weeks. He's adorable in every way, a typical little Westie, but we have a problem with grooming. He's in bad need of a haircut and has been asked to leave 2 groomers so far, as he is petrified. As soon as he sees the scissors, he squeals and cries. Poor little chap. Any advice, please? I've tried chatting with him and giving him treats while I brush his coat. He likes his bath, but that's all. Help, Nolene.
Okay. Hi, Nolene. It sounds to me like he needs to learn to be handled and groomed in a safe space. So maybe, you know, after his bath that he enjoys, maybe sit there and watch TV and just stroke him. Get him used to being stroked without any brushes, without scissors, nothing. Just being stroked. And then you can put the pressure on as if it's a brush, but handle his paws. Get him used to generally being manhandled before you introduce any equipment. Because it sounds to me like the actual environment of the groomers is far too overwhelming, and you can buy your own grooming stuff. So if he trusts you and you can build that up, I would groom him yourself.
Save a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like the initial outlay is a bit, but if you do it 4 times, you've probably got your
money back.
Yeah. OK, good luck with that, Nolene. And there's a pattern here. It's sort of desensitising, isn't it?
It is desensitising.
And rewarding.
Sounds, yeah, an awful lot of it is fear-based.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
because the dogs haven't been shown that they are safe and that there's an exit route and this isn't going to last forever and I don't mean to hurt you. It's about building trust.
Yes.
Everything is about building trust.
Padraig, he says, hi, Raimondo and Samantha. We have a 1.5-year-old beautiful golden Cocker Spaniel. Can you ask, is there special advice for maintaining his large ears? Thankfully so far, no infection, although we switched from chicken-based nuts to salmon-based nuts, a lot of information, to help with ear scratching. We also clean inside the ear with doggy ear wipes.
Okay. Yeah, just to make sure there's lots of oil in the food and I'm very sceptical about sticking things in dogs' ears. I leave that to the vet because you can do serious damage, you know, if you're messing around yourself. So just be careful. And I always comb ears from the bottom up. So from a grooming point of view, you comb from the bottom up and kind of keep them nicely untangled. And maybe, you know, you see the show dogs with their ears tied up when they're eating. So maybe tie his ears up if he's eating or if he's going to be in mucky or dirty areas, maybe tie his ears up. But yeah, certainly wash them, but just be very careful about sticking things in the ear canal.
And what's the significance of the switching from?
I don't know. Maybe they thought that he was allergic to the food, or he didn't like
salmon.
The food.
Okay.
But the spaniels and all of those kind of ears, dogs that have ears, you know, floppy ears,
yes.
They're all prone to ear infections.
Okay. Regina says, I've always taken on rescue dogs, 5 in fact. My present wire-haired fox terrier is so anxious. She sleeps on a blanket at the end of my bed, otherwise cries all night downstairs. Also, when I have to go out, she is anxious and despite letting her out to go to the toilet, will sometimes pee on my floor in protest. Any advice?
Okay.
They're not doing it in protest, are
first
they?
First thing to say is dogs don't do things in protest. They're not that shallow.
No, they're not that intelligent. They're not that intelligent. If they were intelligent enough, they probably would do things in protest.
Okay, well, they live in the moment.
Right,
so I would try and get that dog used to either a dog crate or a dog pen or some secure area that is that dog's. Especially if there's other dogs in the house, he might well be uncomfortable around the other dogs as well. It's a rescue dog. You don't know what's going on. So he needs his own secure space. So a crate for that dog would be really beneficial, but that takes a lot of time and a lot of training.
Right. All of these things take time.
Patience.
I think when they hear a woman on the radio who's a dog expert, they go, oh, I'll send the email in there and we'll have a quick fix. There's no quick fixes, is there?
There's no quick fixes.
No. Okay, I think we have time for one more maybe. Ray, Samantha, my 1-year-old pup who gets out for 2 walks a day is still chewing household items when left alone during the morning. Also, why does she dig holes in the garden? Our older dog has none of these behaviours. Grandmagot, Nolene.
Sorry, Nolene, she's a dog. So dogs dig and dogs chew. She might be chewing out of anxiety when she's left. So again, I would try and keep her safe and give her something appropriate to chew, you know, like some toys with some food in them or
right.
something. But keep her in a secure place so she can't damage your furniture or she can't damage herself.
And what about digging holes in the garden?
Well, dogs dig holes. It depends on what type of breed they dig.
Yeah, it doesn't say what type of dog it is.
And maybe does she ever get off for a run? Does she ever get to run and frolic?
No, 2 walks a day.
Yeah, but 2 walks off lead, on lead, where?
Is it advisable if you can to let them off lead?
Oh, yeah,
it is,
absolutely.
Yes,
yeah. If you can do so safely, yeah, dogs look for frolic. And they need to blow off stress like we all do. They need to blow it all off.
Yes. Off lead.
You know, off lead.
Yeah, I like to get off lead myself.
Indeed, right.
I don't know why I said that and I don't know what it means. Okay, Samantha Rawson, thank you very much. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3:00. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.